Hi, and welcome to episode 8 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and as always, joining me for this week's bungee jump into the Sarlacc pit that is small press comics, writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And, is it a bird? Is it a plane? Oh no. It's just Tony Esmond.
What's the Sarlacc pit?
Oh, come on, Tony.
God.
Star Wars.
I'm leaving this podcast now.
It's the one where Jabba throws.
I'm not saying I don't know what it is. I'm just saying it's something else, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yeah. Okay, let's continue.
It's
the metaphor. Oh, you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 30 seconds in and Tony brings in a metaphor. This is going to be absolute chaos. Anyway, without further ado, you heard him say a little bit there. I don't think he's left, so let's bring him in and give him an intro. This week's guest is a writer and colourist whose work can be seen on the pages of such titles as that fabulous comic, The Red Mask from Mars, Outre Press. What the hell was that? Anyway, he's been covering The Red Mask from Mars, Outre Press, and the upcoming Dead Heretics from Madius Comics. He's also the creator and writer of the comic book series Descending Outlands. It's Sean Doby. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hello, Sean.
How are you doing?
I got you. I didn't really leave. I thought, how long can I leave that out before you actually do just turn it off? Hello, everyone.
The moment of panic that just happened then.
Well, that incident we had a couple of weeks ago with John Locke.
What, when he talked?
He kind of left us on a cliffhanger and then his connection was timed out.
Oh, so bless him.
We were sitting there waiting. Like, where's the punchline here? And there's like, oh, it's gone.
Yeah.
So don't tell everyone how the sausage is made. For God's sake, they all think this show runs smoothly. Let's not give them any ideas.
That's the last thing people say.
Sean's with us for the whole show, and we'll be throwing plenty of questions about his work and his comics at him soon enough. But before we do that, it's time to ask, what have we been reading and doing, gents? Lord Esmond.
I've been to two comic conventions this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, two, get that. One's bills itself as the Safari Arts Festival.
You mentioned this on a previous show, didn't you?
Yeah, talked a bit about that before. It's a sort of Shoreditch sort of arty comics festival. There's a couple of good things there. Simon Morton was there, who does Smooth Comics. He's a good guy. Julia Shield was there. She had a chat with her. She's one who did Metroland, which you talked about, I think, last week. It's very esoteric, sort of psychedelic, sort of non-sequential, a lot of it. A lot of it's sort of scribble and colour a page in and then sell it to me for a tenner bit going on. Okay. It's okay. I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, I'm into most things, but there was some good things there and a few bad things as well. There was a couple of like extremely badly spelt comics, which I think I'll add a bit of a rant on Twitter about. Somebody needs to learn how to spell your.
Oh, really?
On every single page of their comic. Yeah. And there was a lot of sort of, when I got there just after 11, people were still setting up or not arriving and everyone was selling mixtapes on their tables as well as comics. You know, it's that sort of thing. Yeah. It's okay. There's a place for it. And, you know, it keeps the sort of London sort of small press scene quite vibrant, I suppose. I probably won't go next year, but it was okay. I think I titled the piece I did on it, the Safari 2015 Festival, A Grumpy Bloke's Review was my...
It's a fairly apt title, really.
Yeah.
I read the article.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't you say in that article that like some people arrived later to the convention?
Yeah, some people just sort of came in and sort of wedged themselves on the end of tables and made roll-ups and didn't engage with you. I know we talked a bit about this like a few weeks ago. We did our three-hander that, you know, fucking talk to people who come up to your table. Do you know what I mean? Don't just sort of look away and, you know, stare at your feet and all this sort of thing. And yeah, there's a lot of appearance and not content, I suppose. There's a lot of people who concentrate more on the T-shirt they wear. Than the content of the comic they've got in front of them. But there was some good stuff. I got some good stuff there, some interesting. I'm going to talk about one in a minute in my sort of review. And then I went to DemonCon today, which is held in Maidstone. It's a sort of, I think it's twice yearly. Have any of you been to it?
I've heard of it, but I've never
I've planned to go a couple of times. When Vanguard finally gets done as a trade paperback, I'll be down on that, going selling it there. So
yeah, it's good for that. I mean, there was quite a few people there. Dean Beattie, Dave Stokes, Mark Lamming was there. He had a table with Matt Harrower. In fact, as soon as I walked up to the table, they shouted, "Shut up, Tony."
Hey!
So, like, a catchphrase now?
Famous. Yeah. Is that the sort of catchphrase you want, though, Tony?
Not really.
Shut up,
no.
Tony.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I get. Grant Perkins was there, who we talked about on that Kickstarter a few weeks ago. Andy Cliff was there. We talked about in Samurai Slasher. He's a good lad. Dan Abnett was there. I had a good chat with him. He's a nice guy. Marvel writer and Warhammer novelist and stuff like that. And I met someone who listened to the show. I think this may be a first.
Someone who listens to the show?
Yeah, met someone who I didn't know who listens to the show, who wasn't my mother. And it was Dave Broughton, who does Shaman Kane. I think a couple of you read it, have you?
Oh, yeah, it's great book.
Really good comic. A couple of issues out. He does a lot of stuff for Zard Jazz and Dog Breath and stuff like that. Really good guy. I give him a little shout-out. He gave me a page of art, actually. Really nice as a present. Yeah, and he's got a few sort of plans in the works, which he told me not to tell anyone about. But, yeah, he's a good guy, and it's nice to speak to him. Awful lot of sort of quite large ladies stuffed into cosplay clothes. That's quite fair to say.
Yeah.
A lot of sort of shitty Judge Dredds. One bloke was about 5 foot tall.
No, right, we can't necessarily say that the height of a Judge Dredd doesn't make them bad.
No.
I think he was going for Judge Deed.
Judge John Deed.
I did you see the Francavilla piece, the Judge Dredd Francavilla piece this week on Twitter? Did you see that?
No, I see it. No. I know he posts up a lot of artwork. But,
yeah, he posted up a Judge Dredd piece, and he'd spelt it Judge Dredd. It said Dredd on the badge.
And oh, said, shit.
What you mean like Dredd as in like D-R-E?
Double E-D.
Yeah, double E-D.
I can't believe I messed up that spelling.
Right. And so I messaged him and said, like, what's that all about? And he went, I was pissed.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Good answer, actually.
Nothing more to be said there.
Yeah.
It was a good piece of art?
It was all right. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm picky and grumpy, so I thought I'd send him a message saying, actually, you spelt it wrong.
You know.
And other than being called a filthy hippie online this week, I've had quite a good week. What about you guys?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. Vince, you okay?
And that was Dan Butcher's contribution to that awesome comics podcast.
Been looking into, after episode 3, when Chris Wildgoose came on, artist on the excellent Porcelain, he talked at length about kind of making ash cans for the comic and how they did it for Porcelain. Did it for before it came out. And secured like a ton of pre-orders and generated a lot of interest in the comic. So I spent a fair bit of time looking how to make an ash can, basically. And I used InDesign because we have it like on our work machines. And there's a real handy little thing that says print booklet.
And I know about that. Yeah.
And you can pretty much kind of bugger around with it, ask around it till you get the kind of settings you want on it. It took me about 2 or 3 goes to get it down, but then you can rattle them out on a printer quick enough. Cost-wise, well, I did it on the work machine, the one I made. So there was no cost. Yeah.
So what is it? Are you doing like a 4-pager or is it going to be an 8-pager? What kind of?
Well, I did, for this example, I did a whole issue. I'd imagine you'd want to do less for when you're doing an ash can because you don't want to give away a whole issue.
Yeah. So wasn't it like A5 or?
Just A4 folded in half.
Okay.
Yeah.
I bought myself one of those fuck off great big staplers on eBay for like £7.
Is that what they're actually called? Fuck off, great.
If you put down the search terms, it will come up, I think.
Yeah, Amazon have a sale on.
Yeah.
It sounds like a long arm stapler, and then do that. But things to be like, I've got a page where there's a black backing with white text, and it's like, well, if I'm going to print that at home, that's going to be a white background with black text on it.
Yeah,
because
it's
massively ink intensive. So I'm looking to do that. If I could print up and put on the Facebook page what I found out, so. If you're interested in making your own ash can, I'll try and do a little tutorial for you.
Oh, nice.
Oh, he's a giver, isn't he? Nice.
Yeah.
Have you been reading anything, Dan?
I have. I was going to leave that till my recommend section at the end.
Right. Because, I mean, I'm surprised you had a chance to read everything because, like, you just started the new Vanguard issue as well, haven't you? That's just up and rolling.
I've had to drop it back to a page a week updates for the time being, because I've got a shitload of stuff on my plate. So once that shit is removed from said plate, I'll be jumping back to two pages a week updates. So keep them peeled.
Oh, and you read Descending Outlands as well, did you not?
Oh, Christ, yeah. We get a Del...
Oh, that's not going to go well, is it?
Comics sent in, and they're so great. And Descending Outlands is one of the better ones I read this week. So
there you go.
I love you.
We'll give you his PayPal afterwards, Sean, so you can pay him that way.
Well, that's good. He told me I had to pay a much steeper price.
Vince?
Anyway, what have I been doing this week? Well, as well as working on getting back into my comic and figuring out how, getting over some stumbling blocks for issue 4, which was a major sort of hallelujah moment. Have you ever had that, like when you're working on an issue and then you know how everything's going to work after then, but there's like 10 pages or so that you just...
They need to connect.
Yeah. It's not necessarily writer's block, but you just think, I need this to work so that everything else that comes after it can work.
That's just every issue for me, mate. I ain't that talented otherwise.
Oh, don't be silly. So I managed to actually figure it out and do some mock-ups and quite pleased with it. So now it's just all steam ahead on issue. Although I'm working on issue 3 now, I always sort of...
When did you get the eureka moment that... So, there we go.
I'm surprised you didn't hear it. It was about in the middle of the week. Because literally I've been like staring at these 10 pages... Like in my sort of mock-ups that I make, because I know I've mentioned before I make these little A5 mock-ups. And there was like 10 sort of blank pages. And it just clicked. I stepped away from it for quite a long time. I went to sort of work on the actual sort of previous, you know, issue 3 and typing up that. And I just stepped away from it because I was looking at it for too long and trying to fix it. I was trying to work too far ahead in advance for me. And I stepped away, came back, and then just sort of thought, oh, I'll try this. And it worked, and then it moved on to the next thing. And before I knew it, I wanted to jump up and down and let off fireworks. And yeah, yeah. I think I had a beer when I got home that day. Yeah, it's quite nice. You can tell I'm celebrating.
Cool.
I miss the updates about the bus, because you've been on the bus a lot recently.
because I've moved house. Like, my house is like up a steep hill now. And some days you just can't be bothered to walk up.
It's like the Hovis advert. That's why I see your town bit.
I see it's the Journal of Sad Sack from the Raggy Dolls.
Yeah, that tune plays when I'm trying to get up this bastard hill.
You sit at the back of the bus because you get a longer ride for your money.
How do you know? Have you been on this bus? Anyway, enough about my bus adventures. I've also been reading, I read two decent size books this week, as well as like, you know, other little bits, but I read two books by illustrator called John Cullen, an Irish illustrator. The first one's called Take Away My Internet, and the second one's called The Dog Who Shot Lasers Out of His Face.
Nice.
And amazing.
I knew you'd like that. And basically what it is, it works very much sort of like John does it like a daily comic strip every day of every month. He's putting just a page online, and they're like a page joke or they're a page bit of art, you know. Some have some real sort of surreal touch to them. It's like a cross between The Fast Show and like sort of Reeves and Mortimer kind of stuff. Some have like a really tight line style, and some are quite loose and sketchy. He uses lots of colors and really quite arty sometimes. And there's the occasional recurring character as well. There's a ghost and a skeleton who are friends who pick on one another. There's a Zelda-like character. Well, I say a Zelda. It's a Link-like character who keeps coming across frustrating situations. And John also draws a lot of himself into these strips with a lot of sort of... It's almost autobiographical and sort of sardonic sort of humour. Some of them are just straight out funny, like what he's done that day. Other times you can tell he's... the anxiety of an artist, you know what I mean? Like there's one page where it's just sort of him looking at this blank piece of paper, and then the look on his face sort of says everything. If you know, if you've drawn comics, then you know exactly what that feeling's like, and he puts that across. Yeah, I would say his style sort of reminiscent of Chris Filucci, the Ren and Stimpy, the creator of Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like that all the way through. I mean, he's got such an adept sort of visual style. It can change from different things, and like sometimes he draws in sort of plays on like Wolverine or Batman into something, because these are just sort of every day he's busting out a new strip, and there are some of them just laugh out loud moments. And I mean, there is just one that the dog that shot lasers out of his face, there's a page strip that just has a dog that shoots lasers out of his face and takes out an alien spaceship. They're two decent sort of sized books. I mean, Takeaway is 144 pages, which chronicles January, February, March and April of 2014. And Dog Who Shot Lasers Out of His Face, I just love saying that title, is 153 pages. And that covers May, June, July and August of 2014. So they're sort of like back-to-back sort of books. Both also have like a bonus section with some extra strips that he's clearly just done and then, you know, they didn't fit in with the rest of it, so he's put them in these in this selection. So well worth checking out. I mean, it's literally, and it's got that sort of coffee table sort of book kind of feel. You know,
okay,
yeah, you can just sort of pick it up, read a couple, probably laugh your head off, or just think, that's quite thought provoking. And then I'm not saying you'll do that voice. But yeah, I mean, you're just imagining me like in a smoking jacket now, just reading a book and going, that's quite thought provoking.
There you are in your house shorts and
my vanilla
and
ice.
Army boots.
if there's any artists out there, we want to see you draw a picture of what that looks like. Yeah. You can get. I don't want that. You can get both books on his Gumroad. And we've talked about it briefly before with another sort of... Todd McCulloch did Who Needs the Moon on Gumroad. Gumroad. And basically, he's got them... You can get both books for $1 each and you just buy them online. Or you could pay more, do you know what I mean? If you think he deserves a bit more, then, you know, give him a few more dollars. I give him a few bucks for each book. And then you can download a PDF and a CBZ file. I think that's a comic book reader file,
isn't
it? Yeah,
comic book reader. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I've never created one of them, so I know I've used them. Have you had any experience with them, Dan?
I know of them. I have no clue how to make the bloody things.
Interesting.
It's just a zip file, isn't it? Essentially.
I believe so.
Yeah. So essentially, none of us know how to do this.
No. you lost me with C.
Yeah. Well, oh dear, the technophobe that is Tony Esmond. so you can get both of them and you can get a PDF of them, like I said, and his Gumroad is gumroad.com NHOJ. Now at first I thought NHOJ, what is that, because in both books it says an NHOJ comic, and I thought, what is this, where did he get this unique word? And then it suddenly clicked, it's just John written backwards. So everyone now knows what an idiot I am. You can find John's work and the comics on John Cullen. I would say johncullen.com, but it's actually written backwards. So it's NELLUCNHOJ.com.
That's ridiculous.
And his Twitter is at NELLUCNHOJ. And I think I deserve a small round of applause.
Yeah,
for being able to read all that. And even though I made myself look stupid 30 seconds before.
Do you think he looks like Mirror Universe Spock and he's got like a crap goatee as well?
Possible, yeah.
Yeah.
He might do. Yeah. And, you know, he's not drawn it on any of the pages in the book.
Oh, okay.
But maybe let's get some interaction. John, are you a Mirror Universe Spock with a crap goatee?
Yes, I am.
He's here. so definitely check that out. Anyway, to the guest. Yeah, well, you've got a book, haven't you, Tony? You were talking about what you were doing. You haven't talked about what you've been reading.
Yeah, cute, prepared. I've got notes. I keep showing you that I've written notes, and you keep telling me, bollocks, I haven't written notes. I do write notes. I just can't read them when it gets to the show.
Yeah, I know, but it's just just pages and pages of penis drawings don't really count as notes, Tony.
The crayon is really hard to read. Trust me, that's what my notes are in. Especially the green one.
Anyway, Tony, what have you been reading, my friend?
Okay, imagine this. Imagine it's late at night, Vince. Yeah?
Yeah.
And once again, you're Googling some sort of really embarrassing medical condition you've got.
Okay.
I can picture the scene.
Yeah. And the pictures come up. They're quite horrible, aren't they? You know what I mean? They're quite disturbing. Anyone who's ever Googled a medical problem.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
That's what this comic made me feel like. I'm really about to review. Okay.
Oh, this would be a good one. Get comfortable, folks. Put the kettle on because this shit's about to go off.
It's called Coma Deep, and it's a big A4 comic. I bought it at Safari Up Your Arse convention on Saturday, yesterday. This is one of the best things there, actually. I'll say, and I really liked it. I'm not just saying that. It's really good. It's by Bridget Deacon, who she's a UK. She was a London-based creator, but she's moved outside London. She wouldn't tell me where, although I did ask her a few times where she moved to. She's part of something called Eyeball Comics, which is Eyeball was one word, and then Comics, COMIX, and it's an A4 black and white. It's really, I mean, the amount of ink that you look at on this page, it looks like it should weigh about 4 stone. There's so much ink on it. It's really, really heavily inked. It's got a sort of really strange sort of snatched image, non-sequential style to it, and there's moments of it that are absolutely vile. There's sort of humans, twisted anatomy. It's something like, do you remember Zap comics from the 60s or 70s? Anyone remember them?
The tumbleweed moment.
It's got that sort of really underground comicsy feel to it. It's things like melt in it and they transform and there's grotesque things in it, and it moments that you can't read it while after you've been eating, because it'll make you, you know. There's an ongoing strip throughout it called She Bitch Stink Pants, and it's about a lady who's sort of lying on a bed, and she's got sort of she's got sort of shorts on and a sort of chunky top, and sort of, but there's holes in her and things sort of appear out of the holes and hair turns into liquid and worms appear, and she blows a balloon up and holds it on her face and it melts, and out an arm comes through a wall and pulls an eyeball out, and it's really, really strange, and it's a complete counterpoint to how nice the lady was I bought it from. She's very pleasant, quite shy, and you know, but you know, it's very, very strange. I'll stick some pages up on the site, and it's not, I won't say it's dreamlike, it's nightmarish, I think is probably the best way to put it.
When you picked this up from the table, this isn't going to be a joke, by the way, this is just a genuine question. Did you sort of flick through it and then just, you know, the visuals immediately hit you and you just sort of, I've got to have this book? Or did you just saw the cover and just sort of thought, I want that?
No,
and then
I picked it up. It's the cover is, I think I posted it online actually on Twitter. Cover is a full face picture of a very angry looking lady. And then you open it up and it's like the weirdest Hernandez brothers images you can think of.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what that cover reminded me of actually.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and it's got that sort of imagination to it, you know. Complete. I mean, at one point it flips over and we're viewing them holding the comic, we're viewing, and you know, it really plays. They peel a page back, and the peeling of the page back melts and looks like something you're peeling back as a section of skin, for example. And you know, it's got a real sort of meta feel to it. It really, really interesting. Really, really interesting.
Nice. How many pages do you say it was?
It's not long. It's 20 odd pages, I suppose. All A4. And with a couple of sort of single image pages that sort of bring out the transformations in the comic, and they break it up a little bit. There's a bit of sort of story breaks, you know, one page looks like an amoeba, you know, sort of swirling about on the page and stuff like that, you know. You can get a copy at www.brigid, which is B-R-I-G-I-D, Deacon, D-E-A-C-O-N.com. And she's got a Tumblr. Pop over to her Tumblr and you'll probably see an example of what it's like. And that's brigiddeacon.tumblr.com. But yeah, really, really interesting, very, very strange, and worth me going to the Safari Festival alone. I think if I had gone and not picked this up, I would have been really pissed off with wasting my day. But this made it kind of worth it, if you know what I mean.
Nice,
cool.
Yeah, there you go.
That sounds really interesting. I'd look forward to checking that out.
I'll tell you what, I'll bring it when I see you next week. I'll bring it along. And you can have a look at it in the car.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it going to give Dan nightmares?
Yes.
Yay!
Excellent.
But when we spend the night at your house, that will too.
Oh God!
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Oh dear God!
I want my PJs.
The poor man's version of Hostel strikes again.
I like Hostel.
Yeah, I know. and the brilliant segue into changing the subject. Sean, what have you been reading and doing this week, my friend?
Mainly, I've been colouring a comic for Rob Jones and Rob Thomas. I think there's two. Rich Thompson and Rob Thomas. I always get them confused. Called Dead Heretics, which I believe his kind of elevator pitch is a medieval England. A fugitive band of Templar knights do battle with rampaging hordes of zombies to determine the future of all mankind. So, yeah, it's really cool because it's kind of very, very kind of old school, rural kind of clothes, muds and wood huts, that kind of thing, but with burning zombies. So, yeah, that's taking a lot of time, but a lot of fun. But I actually managed to get out of my cell and go to Forbidden Planet and found the October faction. Have either of you kind of...
That's Steve Niles, isn't it?
Yeah, Steve Niles. He did 30 Days of Night artist Damien Worm. And I'm a digital whore, unfortunately. I'm like a magpie on comics. I tend to go to the art first and then kind of appreciate the story afterwards. And it's one of those books that just holding it, you just kind of get a slight orgasm. It's just everything is just glossy and looks nice, and all the pages are just top quality. And yeah, it was just a fantastic story. I couldn't put it down. But it's really annoying because I didn't realize it was an ongoing saga. So when I got to the end, I was like, what? Why are you ending there? You twat.
Did you say that out loud?
I did.
So was it a trade? Is it a trade or was it issues?
I got it as a trade, but there are actually issues I figured out now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was
he's figured out.
I'm not that bright. I've been working too hard. I'm busy with day jobs, and then in the night times, I'm either kind of doing colouring from other people, trying to get the next issue of Descending Outlands done, or some bastard called Vince keeps putting me to work for free. So
I was going to say, avoid Vince at night time. I'll sort that out.
I don't have a choice. He follows me.
Do you live near each other, you two, do you?
We used to, but we don't now, because of the law.
I think it's called a restraining order.
We grew up together at school, but now we're in different cities.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, this is as much as I want to talk to him, to be honest.
This is the first time I've been able to have a conversation with him without actually gagging, because I don't have to see his face.
Oh dear. Right, Sean, Descending Outlands, you previously just mentioned it. That's why we brought you on here, my friend. So, as always, pitch us the book. Tell us all about it.
Descending Outlands is a space adventure that follows the crew of rogues as they hide out on the Outlands, which are planets on the outer edge of the galaxy. They're hiding out from a corporation known as the Fountain that are after them because they've stolen an unstable cargo called Project Isis. Now, Project Isis is a young woman that has great power, but not only do the Fountain want them back, there's also a mysterious man called Mars also after them, and that's kind of like the basis of it, really.
That was quite good.
Discuss.
Wow. That's a good one. Best so far. Well done.
I don't find in any way that like he had that wrote down in front of him.
Really. It's like the 60th draft as well.
Written around that, but there you go.
The thing is, I think you helped me on it, Vince. We wrote kind of an elevator pitch for the back of the comic, and I kind of regurgitated that every time I had to put it somewhere. So I figured for here, I'd write a more succinct version.
That's good.
That's good.
Yeah, because the one on the website and the back of the comic is like the sort of back of the video box sort of spiel, you know, like the classic sort of Steven Seagal. You know, he was just a cook, now he kills everyone.
He's a good cop with a bad attitude, and he also cooks.
Nice.
It's weird, you get the two types of pitches, one that kind of like gives you quite an honest breakdown of kind of what you're going to get, and the other one doing a bit more of a sales job, where you try and make it sound a bit more Hollywood kind of.
Yeah.
What do you prefer?
You asking them or me?
Anyone.
I'm just talking to myself for 90 minutes every...
I prefer whatever makes it sell more.
Whatever makes me get my money back.
Yeah. I'm never going to get my money back, don't worry. I spent far too much on it.
So how did you come up with the idea then, Sean? What inspired you and influenced you?
Well, I mean, me and you the same. We've grown up trying to create comics, but the main difference between me and you, Vinny, is I can't draw for shit. So, unfortunately, that kind of put me at a really disadvantage, really. So kind of tried to learn colouring as I went. And when I started, it was the same as you have a lot of independent comics, where it's kind of like either just flat panels or just kind of a lot of gradients that kind of lights in the right area, but it just looks a bit turd. And, you know, I was like that for a while, but really fell in love with Joe Madureira's artwork and the colouring of Liquid that used to do all of his work at the time. So kind of aspired to learn how to do that, and then started learning how to do cutting, which is kind of what most commercial comics tend to do. And then, yeah, just got fed up of waiting and trying to goad other people into giving artwork for me to colour. So I thought I'd create my own one. And at the time, I was working from home and just went through every single collection of sci-fi I had. So I went through all the seasons of Stargate, Stargate Atlantis, Stargate Universe, yeah, Star Wars were in there, Star Treks, anything with Star in, really.
Stars in Your Eyes.
Yeah. Well, I am Stars in Your Eyes champion for Tony Hadley lookalike. But anyway, but yeah, kind of, and then went through all of these kind of sci-fi shows, which were just so much fun. And then obviously went through your Fireflies and Serenities, and then kind of got to a point where it all ended, and I had nothing new, you know, because all the Stargate's finished and everything just finished. And I just kind of thought, well,
yeah,
I want that fun. There is nothing out there that's kind of that kind of fun on a visual medium, in comics, everything.
There isn't anything like that, like new shows and stuff like that. There's not really much about, is there, at the moment?
No, so I kind of ended up writing an idea, and it started off as a very kind of dark, dystopian kind of apocalyptic future scenario. And the original kind of story I had is actually still the underlying story of the whole kind of probably 3 or 4 volume arc. So I'm not going to digress that now, but it was kind of made a lot more lighthearted, and yeah, I just ended up writing what I thought would be fun, basically.
So it gave birth to itself in some sort of...
Yeah, yeah, and then whittled it down, had to venture into the unknown territory for me of actually trying to hire artists to do my work, trying to get concept art drawn, trying to find the money to actually pay for that. Yeah, so then had to get my characters, get the story arc in place, and then just pay for it to be done, really.
So how did you go about finding artists to work on the project?
I cried a lot. I begged Vinny for a little bit. I've got some early concepts of what I pitched Vinny, and Vince gave back, you know, which were awesome, but they just weren't kind of what was in my head. I couldn't explain what I wanted enough. So what I ended up doing was I treat Descending Outlands not like a comic. I treat it like an actual TV series.
Okay.
Which is why every chapter I actually kind of envision being an episode. And in the same way you have a TV series, each episode has a different director and a self-contained story, but the whole series has an arc story over it. Descending Outlands is the same. So each chapter is supposed to have its own kind of individual story, occasionally two-parters, with an overline kind of story arc, and I have a different artist, so we have a different director. plus, it's a lot easier to get it built that way.
So were you kind of contacted like on the internet? You were kind of like Twitter, whatever, or message boards?
Well, I think John mentioned it last week on digitalwebbing.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I put an ad out on there, and the main thing I did was treat it like the series. So I actually cast all the characters. I went through Google and just found like pictures of people's faces and uniforms and outfits I liked, and kind of made some kind of horrific collage of people. Sent that off and just went, can you draw me a character based on this? And the original one was Nate, who's the main character, and I've got so many different kind of versions of what he could have looked like.
You tried a few different artists to get that concept right, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think I had one person that came back with a very organic looking. It looked like body armor was kind of plant based in a weird way.
Okay.
And it was amazing, but it just wasn't right.
Wasn't the character.
Yeah. And also it was a good way to gauge whether artists were actually any good, because I had a few where I kind of would go in and say, well, I want a comic to be drawn. And they're like, well, $30-$40 a page. So it's like, okay, well, going to have to try and figure out how I'm going to afford this, and then get them to draw the sketch to make sure that they can actually draw the characters, really.
Right.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing as well, because like, there's a lot of artists who are brilliant artists, and they do wonderful pin-ups and like one-off pieces and covers, but sequentials are completely different beasts.
Yeah.
Doing panels and telling a story.
Big time.
Sometimes it does surprise me when you see these amazing sort of artists who do these illustrations. I think, God, their comic work must just jump off the page and just be perfect for it. But it doesn't always gel that way.
There's one that I read recently, and they just got the left and right mechanics of a character being on the side of a page, and they did close-ups of like something happening. And I had to read it a couple of times because I didn't understand what was going on. And they'd had a character that was on the left suddenly flip to the right. And the kind of the flow of it was, like, the art was brilliant, but the flow of it was really broken up because that simple little thing. And it kind of feeds into that. Some people kind of do their great pin-up work. When they get to the sequentials, sometimes they're a bit fuzzy on the technical side of it.
Yeah, and it's a problem where you're not drawing it, and especially where I colour it. I tend to kind of review it when I get the pages back. But then when I actually get to colour it, because I'm zoomed in so close, that's when I actually notice the things where I think, oh, balls, I really should have noticed that earlier on.
Yeah.
It's like in issue two, there's a character called Drake, and he was supposed to be kind of a ruffian, but thinks he's got a higher sense of class, so he kind of dresses like in a suit and that kind of look, but is a bit of a, you know, Ragafarian kind of hair and what have you. And in the first kind of two pages, he's dressed in his suit and looks brilliant. And then I didn't notice that when he turns up in the later part of the issue, he's wearing a hoodie.
Oh, fuck.
And you're just like,
boom. I mean, the thing is, it works because that's a scene. It's not a continuation of a scene.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, because you broke it up in the way that you talked about earlier, you can, you know, you have been able to get away with that because, you know, that's just someone's changing their clothes in between, you know, the first scene and going to this bar. If it was one long scene and that happened, you'd have a bigger problem. You'd have a serious problem.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah. I have had those kind of problems as well, though, because unfortunately, to get the comic made, I have to try and get it as cheap as I can. And that generally means that I have a lot of kind of foreign artists that the language gap is very difficult. So I've had one where Nate's got a metal arm and he's got like one knee pad on. And sometimes the knee pad gets forgotten or the metal arm gets forgotten or the sleeves roll down in one and then up on another. And there was one panel where I kind of said, well, you've made him look, you know, for the whole issue, you've made him look a little bit too clean cut. I want Nate and the rest of the crew to look kind of a little bit messy. So I was like, could you kind of just kind of give him a little bit of a stubble and mess up his hair? And he did for one frame. So, and then the next frame, immaculate again. And it's just like, yeah. Oh, dear.
I mean, thankfully, you've got like sort of Photoshop chops and like you say, you're colouring it, so you can, you know, if you, I mean, I don't know how many times you've had to like fix or amend things.
Lots.
but, you know, you have the ability to do it. But whereas if it was someone that wasn't necessarily doing all that, I mean, how would they go about changing that? Do you know what I mean? That would
be a
long, yeah.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game. And, you know, I've been stung by it as well. I mean, not in a nasty way. You hear horror stories of people that have kind of been denied payments and have been delivered like horrific stuff and things like that. But generally my ones, they've been lovely people and they've been really good. But I have one artist that I hired and I tend to base it a lot on faces. It's surprising how many people can't make good faces. They can do immaculate art, but then if the face just looks off, then it kind of ruins it in a way. Yeah. But I had the reversal. I hired someone that did really amazing facial expressions, but then the rest of it was very, very simple, like a Disney style. Okay. And at the end of it, it just didn't fit in with the rest of the issue. So I had to just, I paid them for the work, said thank you very much, and just binned the pages.
As the book's evolved as well, it's getting its own style, isn't it? So, you know, is that something that you're wary of, that, you know, these artists have given it a style, so you can't necessarily go to a really cartoony sort of style for one chapter. You know, you have to, do you feel like you have to stick to this sort of visual sort of code? Is that the right word? Is that the right term? I don't know.
Yeah.
It works. Sounded good, didn't it?
Yeah.
Is that through choice you've gone for that, or like the artists that you've have gone for the role have been of a similar style?
I've been very strict on it. I think when I put the advert out, I had like 60 or 70 people come back in with varying degrees of skill set and style. And some amazingly talented people out there, especially that are willing to do it for peanuts, really, compared to what some people can pay. But yeah, I literally had to try and find out. I wanted it to look as professional as possible. Whenever I do something, and I can't say no to anything, really. I just like being involved in any creative process. But when I do it, I like to be to the best quality it can be.
Mm.
And so I wanted it to not look like an indie comic, something that I've just put together. So I tried to find artists that, in my eyes, looked like professional comic artists. And I wanted the universe to be gritty and real. I didn't want it to be glossy and, woo, sci-fi spacey. Yeah. You know, I think what works with things like your Stargates, for example, or even like Star Wars.
Stars.
We ignore the prequels.
Yes, ignore the prequels.
But what works with them is you kind of have a gritty real world that actually feels tangible and real, and then you have kind of like the normal person, you, in that world.
Yeah.
So with like Stargates, you have the magical kind of spacey planets, but then the actual people that go through it are kind of the wise, arsey kind of normal folk. And that's kind of what I wanted for Descending Outlands. I wanted the epic landscape of space to look amazing, but for the viewer to be just like anyone, just like me or you, just kind of existing there.
Yeah.
But a hell of a lot.
That's attractive to a lot of people, isn't it? I think, yeah. I was going to say, Sean, about your influences. I mean, you quote Joe Mad. I'm going to put you as a sort of image guy. Were you early on, or?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it was Marvel or Image. I mean, being Mad, it was very much Marvel to start off with, because I was very much into kind of the X-Men years and the Onslaught sagas.
Right, okay. So sort of 90s onwards, I'm going to say, is that?
Yeah, it was about it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, before that, it was Todd McFarlane's, because I still do kind of have a love on the symbiote, Venom Carnage.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think they're done particularly well, and sometimes they're now done to death, I kind of went on that kind of whole cool angle.
What was the saga you had all of? Was it Maximum Carnage?
Maximum Carnage.
Man.
Yeah, which is awesome, but at the same time, really crap.
Because
I don't think it takes a reread, does it? I've got to be honest here.
No. It starts off so promising because you have this whole, he's killing people because he can, and then he doesn't kill anyone, really.
I've got the first issue of Venom Lethal Protector. That's
Is
that the glossy cover one?
Yeah, I was like, okay, I don't need to read any more of this.
I think I lasted a while.
How old were you then, Dan, when you had that?
I don't know.
And you were talking like, I don't think I need to read any more of this.
Old enough to know better.
I'm going to have to stop the dog.
That's an interesting one we'll have to do one day. It's the first comic we remember reading. That'd be an interesting one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, especially when it comes to you, Tony.
Yeah, the 1950s. I see a little bit of the Image revolution in your work. I mean, there's obviously Serenity and, Star Wars and those influences, but I can see a little bit more these days. Do you read much Image these days, do you? Or?
Not too much. If anything, I actually kind of went on a back burner of comics. I've just been so busy that I haven't had time to actually read much. And then anything I do tends to be the independent ones that I get from these comic conventions now. I did absolutely adore the Superior Spider-Man saga. I loved that. Right.
I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the new Novas as well.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so I've kind of gone back to Marvel, really.
Something like Copperhead or, it's one of these sort of Image sci-fi books that seem to have a look, Black Science and all that sort of thing.
Love Black Science, the covers especially.
Incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I love the way they've done that kind of white border on the side and the text just kind of slightly going over it.
It's a design dream, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
In fact, most of, how do you say it? Is it Remender? It is Rick Remender, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of his sort of stuff they look quite nice and designed and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as much.
Deadly Class, is he?
Deadly Class. It's not so super designed as like a Hickman book, but
sure. I mean, I think there's a space, especially in UK small press, for a pure fun sci-fi opera kind of book like this. You don't see it enough, I think, in the small press scene. Certainly, would you agree? Or
I haven't seen too much of it. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm unique. But
I mean,
I haven't really seen
that
many
side of things. I think there is some manga stuff, isn't? But just this sort of straight adventure stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of it, which is good for me.
It gives it a unique voice, isn't it, really? Yeah, and especially like in a small press scene, there's a lot of sort of characters. I mean, mine for one is like just one character, whereas yours is a big overarching, big sci-fi story, which not a lot of people sort of attempt. Because like you briefly mentioned that you've got like a 3 or 4 volume arc for it. So you've got big plans for this.
Yeah, I designed a giant universe to start off with, which is very much a Nick Angel approach, I think. Give yourself a headache before you even bother trying to start it. my actual idea originally was to actually not worry about comics. I wanted to just release it as a trade paperback, just as a giant chunk of a novel, basically. But as soon as I started and realised how much it would cost me... I just thought that's not possible. I need to try and generate some income as I do this, which is why I split it down. And it doesn't help that I have to do it in tandem with Red Mask, so it means probably about 4 or 5 months of a year are written off because I've got to colour Vinny's comic and then colour mine.
God help him. Well, the thing is, because your colouring work's taken off as well, like you say, Dead Heretics, you're not going to have time for anything, Sean. You must do nothing apart from your full-time job and colour comics. So you're
to get rid of the full-time job and just colour comics, actually.
You're not allowed toilet breaks. You're not even allowed toilet breaks.
I didn't need them.
How long did you ever read Techno Phase, the Neil Gaiman, Brian Talbot book?
Oh, yes, I did. I think I've only read the first issue or two issues of it, but yeah, that looked lovely.
Yeah, in that he had them working at desks, didn't he? But they're actually sitting on toilets, so they don't get up.
That's how we do the show, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, I call my pants a toilet, you know.
I call my chair.
I call mine an apocalypse. But where were we?
I think, Sean, how long did it take to do a colour a page?
It takes me far too long. I'm not as clever as some. And also, I'm too much of a perfectionist. Mm. So there's certain times where, especially in backgrounds, where some people would just whitewash it out or just make it quite faint. And I'm like, oh, there's a can there. Let's really make sure the shading's on the can in the background. but it depends. Flatting takes a long time. That takes most of my time. And as I colour it, as I'm doing the shading myself, I tend to cheat. So my flatting isn't necessarily just flatting. I kind of flat, but at the same time, use that to either texturize or decide what colors I'm going to do for certain people. So that's why it takes me a bit longer. But I suppose an average page is around about 2 hours, I suppose.
Okay.
So yeah,
it's by far the longest process for me is the coloring. Mm. It fucking takes forever.
It does. And I do shout a lot because artists don't realize how sloppy they are, especially when they have aliens with red heads. They don't connect lines, you know. Yeah. Sometimes they just draw a knuckle here, but then there's a random dot somewhere else.
After the first issue, I know certainly when I was doing the artwork for the second issue, before I gave it to Sean, you know, there was definitely more of an emphasis of going in and trying to give him as less a headache as possible. Because with the first issue, he had got used to the visual style of it and the colours, because it is a very different palette on the Red Mask than it is from Descending Outlands. But because I know how much work that he puts into it, I wanted to make his life as easy as possible and not be too picky. So you have to zoom in and fix all those bits of line work and try. You know, the second issue as well was a bit of a nightmare with all the details I put in. So I'm going on the record and saying, I'm sorry, Sean. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. No, it's a pleasure. I love colouring. I don't do it because I have to. I mean, at the moment, I'm doing more than I probably would like because I have deadlines. But it's quite relaxful to do. It's like when you have an artist that just draws for fun, that kind of sensation, really. Although space sharks have so many fucking spikes, it's unbelievable. but going back to influences, I suppose it's worth mentioning, because everyone pointed out the kind of Firefly Serenity similarities of the first issue. Because like everyone else, I'm a big fan of Firefly and Serenity and gutted that it went. But I really tried hard not to actually imitate it at all. But I needed to have my main character was supposed to be female. But then when I actually tried to introduce her into the world, I realised, well, she's not really becoming main until the second story arc. So Nate's become the main character at the moment. Because of the similarities of a heist, stealing a crate that has a woman in and the woman has some kind of power, you know, everyone kind of goes to the conclusion of, oh, I've just copied Serenity.
Right.
Which I tried not to.
It's one of those lazy comparisons, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we've talked about that loads, haven't we? Yeah, I think, that's stupid people, easy shorthand. Yeah.
But that's
when it clearly isn't that, you know. Yeah,
yeah, which is why the second issue is quite nice, because it just has nothing to do with it anymore, which is quite nice.
Well, I said last week, a week before, about like first issues, it's very hard to judge, because it's just set up, the first issue set up, and you got to see more of the payoff as it plays out. So to kind of write something off after the first one, I think that's a mistake.
Mm. Yeah.
Give it room to breathe.
It's interesting. Unless it's an absolute disaster, you know, if you pick up your first issue, I mean, this is my mindset. If I've picked up the first issue, in some ways I've sort of guaranteed that I'll get the first three, for instance. I've got to keep going for the first three before I think, nah, this isn't for me. Unless it's god awful.
I mean, I don't have any delusions of grandeur. I know I'm not the best writer out there, and I'm quite new to the whole writing side of it, really. And so, like with a lot of things, I kind of think, well, if I make it look good, it will kind of cover up the shitness of the writing. So try and get really good artists in to sell it.
I didn't like the art either. I'm joking.
Oh, too late. I've
talked about this briefly with Tony before we came on. Like, the art has got to be a certain standard for me before I kind of take the comment on comic. It doesn't have to be, like you say, kind of Joe Maddell kind of glossy colours, but a certain level of proficiency, it's got to be there before I take it up. Otherwise, because if you can't tell the story either through the writing or through the art, you're kind of losing me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we talked a lot about it's not just the art, it's the sequentials. And to me, this works really well. I have to say, there's some action sequences in the first issue I've got in front of me, and it all flows really well. And I think you've done well finding an artist who can carry that off. So it's clearly written well, but the firing the guns in the sort of hold of the ship bit, I really like that part of it. Yeah, and it flows well between each thing. And the artist, whilst he's got sort of quite a sort of clean line, and you can clearly see what's going on, he's carried the action out as well, which is a sort of double bonus, I think, isn't it? You know,
I think the fact you're colouring as well always it helps the continuity of the piece.
Well, that's another reason why, besides the fact it means I don't have to hire anyone, it means at least there's something that is uniform throughout it. And I've even started now kind of writing almost a crib sheet of, like, this is Nate. He has to have this, this, and this, and this, so that when all the different artists draw him, at least there's some common ground, because everyone takes liberties in a way.
Do you have like a Bible, do you? Did you write a Bible to start with of, you know, characters and you know, where this place is and where that place is?
I had a whole backstory as well. I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but you find out quite the end of the second issue is quite a big cliffhanger that you're like, okay, how are you going to get back from that?
Well, we're fortunate enough to read the second issue, and you're launching that at Melksham, is that right?
Coming weekend.
Yeah, so, Melksham, when did we say it was? 29th and
30th.
The bank holiday weekend. Yeah, so you're launching Descending Outlands 2 in print. Is it going to, are you going to try and get it digital on the same day as well?
It's going to be available on the site, which is descendingoutlands.com, and also on my own website, which is evilcat.com. There's a little online shop on there where you can actually purchase the comics as digital downloads or paper.
Oh, cool. That's also your portfolio site for your colouring and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So it's just nice to, one, show off what I do, and two, for people that are interested in getting stuff coloured, can see if I fit their profile, really.
And you've got this nice sort of look on your website where you've got a piece of light, some of the coloured stuff you've done. You've got the black and white sort of line art, and when you sort of hover over it, it goes colour so people can see the before and after.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good idea.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think a lot of people don't appreciate, especially if they're not in comics, the amount of people that ask what I do. I go, I colour comics. Right. And they're like, okay, my 5-year-old does that. I got it inside the lines and everything. They don't quite appreciate kind of how much work and what it can actually add, or if you're bad, subtract from an actual image. So I try and put it on there.
What I did once was in Photoshop, every time I was colouring a page, and every like so often I would save it as like a web version and then build it up, and then I made a GIF, an animated GIF, whatever, out of it. Mm. So you could see like it animate it build up, and it kind of gives people an idea of, fucking hell, there's a lot of steps in this.
Yeah, I did recorded a speed colour of me doing a page the other day, and then realised how much I zoomed in and out, and it actually pretty much will give you a seizure if you watch it. So be careful.
Can you find that? Have you got a YouTube page that you can find that on?
Yeah.
Not that I want to give loads of people, all our listeners, seizures.
It's actually just on my blog, which is on my actual site, so evilcat.com. It's evilcat with a K.
Nice. Yeah, Melksham is going to be there for the Descending Outlands. You can get both one and two at the convention, can't you?
Yep, you can, and also doing a special edition pack where you can buy one and two together with a few kind of posters.
Who'd you nick that off, that idea?
I'm not saying anything.
The amusing thing is I actually, it's not exactly an original idea, but I came up with it, got all the stuff printed, got everything in there, and this was going to leave it until the convention. Then saw Vinny post one up, and I was like, you bastard! So I'm going straight up afterwards.
Well, I mean, I think and it, this is just in general, I think if you've got a couple of issues of your comic, it benefits you to do deals or packs or give because there are always, most of the people that approach your table will never have approached your table before. So make sure you, rather than just having the single issues, you want, because you want them to buy as much as they, you know, as they can possibly carry. So yeah, give them these packs, give them, and not just, you know, here's issue one and issue two. Always say, here's issue one and issue two. You buy them together, you get a poster with it. You know, here's a pack where you get issue one and issue two, and there's a print in there as well.
You did one, Vince, which is like, it's a colouring sheet. And it's like, this is a printout, but it's a colouring sheet. And like, they're very much in at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah,
colouring.
Yeah.
When I launched Red Mask last year in 2014, I did a special sort of Zenosphere pack. I didn't realise at the time, and Sean was actually with me the night before helping me put these packs together.
And such a long night.
Always the night before. How much planning fucking done.
I planned it out, but there was naturally, I couldn't put it all together. There was one last thing that I had to get in. So I had that on the
semen.
Last.
Yeah. Ran out of print stick for the packs.
Where's the sellotape? What do you mean we haven't got any? Oh, God, desperate times. I put all these packs together, and it had like a little sort of cardboard figure that you could put together. There were badges. There was a little print I did, as well as
issue one. We don't need no badges.
And I also did like a colouring in sheet, as Dan mentioned. And it seems like this year they are all the rage. Where did that?
They are, aren't they?
Where did that come from? I mean, how much have you seen about Tony?
From you.
Yeah, right.
I was tempted to do the same, actually, but I decided not to.
I've seen news TV on TV, like, of groups of people meeting up to do colouring books. There's one lady who sells, I don't get it myself, but she's got she sells books in all the supermarkets of a kind of intricate pictures of flowers and birds and stuff, and they're selling by the shitload. She's doing really well, so I don't know what it's about, but a lot of people are into it. Kind of like BDSM.
I can't believe you went from colouring in books to BDSM.
You could do that though, couldn't you? What shall I do, mistress? Colour this in.
Stay in the lines.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
Yeah. I've really felt tips.
You only colour in cream, brown and red.
Oh, dear God.
Jesus. He had to stay red, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he has listened to the show, so he was already prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
there you go.
Yeah, talking about...
That's Descending Outlands.
Yeah, Descending Outlands. Going back to your colouring process, Sean, because I think colouring and lettering, they're certainly the art part of the art.
I forgot to mention that, didn't I? There's a fantastic letterist I have for Descending Outlands
that,
as well.
That wasn't a segue, actually. By the way.
I know, but I was meaning to just kind of highlight the fact that, Vinny, you do the lettering, and I have to say it adds a whole different layer that I couldn't possibly actually get without you, so just verbally thought I'd put that out.
What
there.
Do you mean?
Now carry on.
Some kind of sort of flamboyant, weird name online.
What? Look, the Jester Diablo.
Jester Diablo.
Oh, dear. No, that mystery's going to stay for another week. But colouring and lettering, they're very much the sort of arts that a lot of people overlook, but they're a major, major part of it. How did you get into it, you know, and what programs do you use? You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there, much like you, I guess. So what tips and advice and what sort of programs would you suggest to them? Yeah.
Well, when I started back in the days of... I used Flash a lot, and I used to kind of put in a page and then used to do trace bitmap, which used to turn it to a vector.
Yeah.
And then used to kind of just use the fill tool and what have you. But that used to kind of degrade the artwork. You'd lose a lot of the detail, and it's kind of a horrible way of doing it, to be honest. But now I just kind of do it very raw. I literally just put the image into Photoshop and separate the layers, and then do a flat layer behind it and a background layer behind that, and then mask off areas such as skin, which I then put in its own layer, and then kind of build shading on top. I tend to color flats in dark and then add the lighter shades on top of it. There's so many different styles, and the difference is like artwork, that what one person likes another person doesn't. With Descending Outlands, for example, I sent it off to two reviewers,
and one guy preferred the new artwork in issue 2, and the other guy thought it cheapened it.
Okay.
Which, you know, quite surprising, because I think it's fantastic. So yeah, but YouTube, there's lots of colouring tutorials on YouTube that kind of help. The process I use is called cutting, which is quite a common one, and that is where you mask off an area, for example, the triangle area underneath your eye, which is usually on the shaded side, and then you kind of use a gradient with a screen tone to kind of lighten it gradually, so you end up with that kind of harsh edge on one side, but then fading into the natural skin tone, so you don't have a solid colour. Yeah, so just kind of practice, really. It's just practice, looking for examples. As I said, YouTube have a lot on there. And don't be afraid as well. When I started, I used to kind of feel you had to be very subtle. And you used to just have to do like subtle changes of light. But actually, the harsher they are, sometimes the better it looks. And normally when you have light hitting, you do have a line where the light and the dark hit.
You also have to bear in mind, if you're getting it printed like hard copies, that when it goes through that printing process, things are going to change. You know, you can look at the top of your... When you get a stack of books, look at the top issue and the bottom issue. They might not match up.
Yeah.
Because that's just the nature of the printing process. You know?
Printing's a bitch.
Yeah.
One thing I found in cut, if you're not sure about your page, is flatten it and then take it to black and white, just grays. And ooh, if your page is it's just grays, not there's no kind of like light points and dark points, you've done something wrong. You'll go back and make stuff darker, make stuff lighter.
I find different machines... different screens, it's also a really good tip, because my machine at home, I've now learned, is actually very dark. So what... No, the opposite, sorry, it's very light. So what actually looks normal to me, when I used to send it to people, looks really dark and muggy. So I actually have to lighten it after I finish it. But I just then put that on my phone or on my tablet, and then you can see it in all its glory, like if you got it from Comixology, and you go, oh, actually, no, that looks good.
Well, part of my job is handle the colour calibration of the computers, machines we use in the office. And when you kind of go from a colour calibrated machine to kind of going to my home one, and it's like, holy fuck, I can barely see anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. It's worth investing in some calibration devices, or a device.
Yeah, I might well do. I mean, I've got a...
expensive. They can be expensive, but...
Well, I've got me a Surface... Microsoft Surface Pro 3 that I've now started doing, which is probably the cheaper option of a Wacom tablet, really. And yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, because the colour's so nice, you can rest your arm on it, which is something you can't do with like iPads and that. And the pen is fantastic as well. So as a low budget option for actually a tablet, and it's about A4 size as well, it's a good size.
And you've had that. You've had that at conventions, didn't you? Was that what you had at True Believers in? Was it February? Did you have it then?
Yes, that was when I first brought it.
So at those sort of quiet moments, you could just bust it out and then colour up the latest page of whatever you're working on at that moment in time.
Yeah, exactly. But I kind of tended to, with the tablet as well, you can stand up. So it meant I didn't have the whole, I was looking down at my desk as well. Looked more like I was looking at a clipboard.
Tony, have you ever noticed this when you've gone to a convention where they do like a kind of artist tutorial thing where they have a couple of pros there helping people out? They do that
occasionally. Yeah, there's a couple of, I think Comica have done a few events where they draw on a screen and you can watch them. I think the one you did, Vince, they did a bit of that, didn't they? The Comica at the British Library. I think they were doing it there.
Yes, I think it was. I'm not sure where they were doing it. I was sort of stood in the middle of the British Library, being surrounded.
You were on the. You're on the escalator, weren't you, upstairs?
Yeah. Oh, no, I wasn't on the escalator. My table was just going up and down all day. That was an interesting convention. But yeah, like you say, there was talks, but I wasn't quite sure.
You do see the odd tutorial thing. I must look at I think the New York schedule's about to go up, and I'll have a look to see if they've got anything going on. But occasionally, not always. I don't think they're doing it at Nottingham. I don't think Melksham are doing anything, but maybe the bigger ones have got something going on, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you would have thought there's such a people want to learn this stuff that you wouldn't want to cater for that.
But then again, do people want to tell them? You know, that's the thing. If you're a colorist, you're the Geordie Belair or something like that. You know, you've got what 10 books lined up. Do you want somebody else edging in?
It's a fair point. Yeah, you know, fair point.
The tricks of trading, you know.
Yeah. Are you saying it's like a rock and roll sort of Mad Max kind of wasteland? And all the colourists are just fighting each other to the death.
Well, I guess It's kind of like you're a fisherman and you're teaching other people how to fish. You're kind of putting yourself out of business in a way.
Yeah.
I must say, my metaphor was a lot cooler.
Yeah, sort of sexier.
But and yours kind of goes against charity adverts as well.
Dan Butcher hates charity.
Help a man to fish, and he's fucked us all.
I'm a vegetarian. Fuck you. I see what you mean. There's people who are sort of quite generous with their time, aren't they? I know we've talked about Bendis a few times, but in his book, he does explain stuff that's very sort of tricks of the trade that he does, you know, and you think, oh, that's a good idea. You know, and there are lots of, you know, it's not all just pure talent, isn't it? There's a lot, there's 99% tricks of the trade and learning how to do stuff, you know, or just getting off your ass and doing it.
I mean, I mean, at conventions, like at panels and stuff, you know, when the creators are there, do they talk about that? I mean, you've hosted a couple of panels, haven't you, Tony? Do you find that a lot of people talk about the process and what they do, or is it more?
They do. Depends on how good they are at public speaking, I think, is the main part of it. Some of the people there, you know, they just sort of fluff their way through stuff, but there's sort of the
better. You mean like this show?
Yeah, a bit like us. Yeah. Yeah. And if you get bored, you just say a sexy thing. It puts people off and change the subject. Yeah. It depends on the person. John McRae, I interviewed last year, and he was very, very generous with his time. And afterwards, he was chatting to people, and he said, no, don't do this, do that. But then again, that's because he's got a background in teaching comics, you know? It depends on the person. I think some of them are very good, and some of the up-and-comers, you know, are a bit secretive. They won't tell you what program they write on, and, you know, there's a bit of that. I spoke to a writer recently, and he was very careful about what he'd say.
Really?
And, you know, he almost sort of double-took me when I asked who his editor was, you know, thinking, no, he's not going to contact my editor and ask to do a job for him. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's an income for people, I suppose, at the end of the day, so you can't really sort of give them a hard time around it, but, yeah.
But you find with a lot of the small press people, like...
Yeah, we don't mind, do we?
It's like, how do you do this? You know, who did you use to print your comics? Oh, I use this person.
There's a lot of that in small press, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit shameless, but on my Patreon feed, I have an open thing where anyone can ask a question, and I do like once a month do a tutorial of how I do something. And it's open, so if someone's on there and they say, how do you do X? Give me a couple of days, and I put together like a PDF.
Isn't X a drug?
Yeah.
The drugs are available.
Yeah. Intravenous.
But, I want that PDF.
I've done a couple. We can do that one week, can we? All just take drugs or get drunk or something and do the show. That'd be good.
That's been mentioned before. Yeah.
That's this week.
By Tony. Hey?
Maybe when we go on holiday.
Yeah. You're in that infamous bloody holiday. Yeah. it's already infamous. Back to your... where can you find that Patreon page, Dan?
I'm going to have to put the link.
Don't put that in the Google, people, for God's sake.
I'm not sure what the link is, but I'll have to
I'll put the link up in the show notes. Yeah. Mm. So when you check out the website, people, have a look at all the show notes, because there are links to everything that we mention.
Well done, Dan, on doing a Patreon that actually has some kind of content on it.
Yeah, I'm always trying to give them content. I said before, I do this thing where... Yeah, depending on how much you... There's like a £5 patron. I'll give you kind of like an inked sketch of whatever you want. And then I'll keep saying to these people, what do you want? And then no reply back. And it's like, okay, anything? You just want to give me money? It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. If you want to give me money and nothing in return, I don't mind doing that.
One day, it'll come back to bite you. I've been watching The Sopranos a lot recently, so I know that'll come back to bite you.
So you owe me, Butcher.
Just leave them with the fishies. There you go.
I think we mentioned all your links, haven't we, Sean? Where you can
I think that's about it. I mean, only advice I would give to anyone that's in my situation with regards to kind of comics but can't draw would just be careful. It's very easy to be stung by people, but at the same time, don't take the piss, because artists are, especially good ones, are worth looking after. So just make sure that you... promptly tell how you're going to pay them. I tend to pay mine in threes, generally one up front, just as an act of faith. It's a bit of a risk for me, but I think, you know, shows my kind of dedication to it. I pay them, and generally I expect them to come back with page layouts, very rough ones for me to sign off. And then once they've done the pencils, I then give them a second installment, and then when they finish the inks, I give them the final payment.
Good idea.
I think, yeah, treat your artists well, especially if you find a good one.
I made the mistake a few years ago of paying a guy to do a cover for me. and he worked here, and won't name him, but he worked in a comic shop, this guy, and I went in, and literally on the shelf in front of where he served the customers was the picture that he traced it from.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Well, yeah, I had
never got used, you know.
Well, yeah. Descending Outlands should have been released about 6 months ago, the second issue. But my original artist that I had, unfortunately, just kept making excuses every month.
Right.
And eventually delivered me absolutely nothing, so I had to fire him, yeah, lose my deposit, and get another artist. So,
right,
you know, it's easily happens, even if they are actually very good. Best willing, unfortunately, life gets in the way.
Yeah, I think it happens in all avenues of this sort of job, doesn't it? You hear horror stories from the big companies as well, don't you? You know.
But, so basically, it's communication and respect.
Yeah, I think that's how the whole industry really needs to run.
So this show, it's this how this show runs, isn't it?
But to finish my comic
shut up,
chattering, to finish my colouring chattering, I just wanted to give Dan a nod, actually, just saying I was looking at the Vanguard and thinking, God, this is bollocks. I was looking at the Vanguard, and I jumped from the first page to the last few pages, and colouring, mate, has just come on leaps and bounds. I'm loving the latest pages, the rain effect and everything as well. It just looks magnificent. So good job on that one, mate.
Oh, cheers, mate. Ta.
Definitely. Dan, though.
I'll shut up now.
Dan, you and I, because we're proper geezers from London, we'll probably give these carrots a kick in next week, though, yeah?
Is that right? Sounds good.
These carrots. Jesus. You, sir, you've obviously never been down these parks before, have you?
Yeah, you don't talk like that gangster stuff to us, because we fly, you know?
You're going to be in our yard. You are. I almost lost it then.
You calm down, Vince.
On your couch.
You'll be sleeping somewhere.
With the fish.
Yeah. Right, we previously mentioned, we've mentioned it a few times, but Melksham Comic Con. So, which is going to be on the
29th and 30th of August.
29th and 30th of August, yes. Next weekend, there's going to be lots of artists there. You've normally got lots of notes about it, Tony. Have you got the list?
I have, yeah. Shall I read them out?
Go for it, my friend. Melksham Comic Con, who's going
to
be there?
So, Saturday the 29th to Sunday the 30th, between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Present at it is going to be Mike Collins, artist on Doctor Who. Lee Townsend, who was at DemonCon today. Emma Vicelli, artist. Sonia Leong, who's a manga artist. John Paul Bove, he's artist, colorist, and writer. Dylan Teague, really interesting artist, Dylan. I have to say, I really like his stuff. And Kavan Scott, who's a writer. There's probably going to be a couple more guests announced. And there's a series of panels, which I think have gone live on the website now. I think they're up, are they?
Yes, they are indeed. I've got a list in front of me if you want to know what kind of things you can check out there.
Yeah, go on.
On Saturday at 10:30, there's the panel for Creating Manga by Sonia Leong, which we were just talking about, like finding out about processes and stuff. That she's going to be talking to people about that. 11:45, there's going to be LGBT and the comic book industry. Emma Vicelli and Joe Glass, which are talking
about Pride.
Yeah.
Excellent comic.
What's that, sorry?
He does the Pride comic.
Oh, I've seen him. He was at London, wasn't he? I think I saw him, yeah.
And that's a panel all about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. And it's been in the media a lot and how it's going into the comic books now and like how it's received, etc. That's going to be a very interesting talk, I think. 1 p.m. is friend of the show, John Locke, and Big Punch Studios with Lucy Brown, Nick Angel, and Alice White. They're going to be talking about everything that they're going to be doing, including their very first card game, Sandwich Masters, which is also
Sorry?
What I... Sandwich, Ma-
Sandwich Masters.
Sandwich Masters, a card game.
It does look awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't join in with him. Fuck's sake, you're a guest.
No, Sandwich Masters.
I hear you, Tony. I'm going.
Yeah. No, you should look it up, Tony. It's going to be quality.
I will. I'm going to.
Yeah. Well, you can how to make a sandwich. No, there's a lot more to it than that, and you'll be able to find out when you see them next week. At 2:15, there's a Doctor Who panel with Mike Collins and Kavan Scott, which I think that does everything that it says on the tin. 3:30 on the Saturday, the PCG presents comics in just a minute. If anyone's been to the website, the PCG, a bunch of Bournemouth-based comic fanatics. They're hilarious, and they always do some sort of game show or something like that. That's going to be well worth checking out. So four guest contestants.
Are they?
Yeah, well, no one's as good as us. No one can stumble over their words like we can. So it's going to be four guest contestants must battle for supremacy by talking about a topic for a whole minute without stuttering, repeating themselves, or going off topic. So it's absolutely nothing like this show.
Yeah. We're fucked.
Royally.
And on the Sunday, that's Saturday's panels, on the Sunday, 11:30, the PCG again, they present the 2015 debate panel, which right. is surprise panelists go up against each other to debate about against a mystery subject, which is going to be a good laugh. 12:45, Creating Comics for Children with Kevan Scott and Mike Garley. That's going to be quite Mike Garley, who's actually done work for Adventure Time.
Yeah,
hasn't he? Yeah. So that's going to be...
Do super violent comics. He does kids' comics as well. I saw him today, actually. Had a chat with him today. Oh, yeah. Good lad.
How is he?
Yeah, good. Yeah, he'd been to John Scrivens' wedding. Congratulations, John. John's a colourist and artist on Little Terrors and stuff. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Congratulations, got married John. 2 p.m. on Sunday is Big Punch Studios present Comic-Con Pictionary. So I think there's going to be another... game show going off here. What happens when you pit two professional artists against each other in the ultimate draw-off?
Who cares?
That's John Locke, Nick Angel, Mike Collins, and Jess Bradley. Jess Bradley, who's a brilliant artist, who did an absolutely amazing picture of Steve Rogers and Devil Dinosaur, which I know Sam Humphreys and our good friend Mark Lamming loved.
Oh, I saw that. Sorry, yeah, that is good.
Jess is a fantastic artist. She's done lots of little books. Pick up loads of her stuff from Melksham because I know I had a Predator key ring which has broken, and so I need to get another one. And she does everything in this great little style, and we'll have to get her on the show at one point. And 4 p.m. there's a cosplay competition, which is one of the big cosplay, as we know, is always a major puller for comic conventions. So that'll be at 4 o'clock.
Mark Amming, he loves a cosplay, doesn't he?
Yeah, we're going to ruin his good name as much as we can.
Don't get any green body paint in my car on the way back, Lamming. There's your warning. He's already told me not to say that story again, so I had to say it.
Yeah, well, there is a story about a bear that we need to hear at some point.
Oh, I'll tell you that when I see you, when we go to the pub on Saturday.
Oh, splendid.
You'll like that story. Yeah, there's no bears involved.
Oh, my God. And... on both days, there's going to be tabletop gaming. There's always a games room. So, yeah, I know that's a big... I mean, I don't really do tabletop gaming and stuff, but I know that's a big thing. So you can go there both days. So it's going to be, as well as all those panels, you've got all those guests. And, you know, there's a lot of small press people going there. I mean, as well as, like, you've got those names that we mentioned. People like Sam Rhodes. You've got Jenny Gillibrand. There's myself and Sean. David Hitchcock, you mentioned Orangutan.
Oh, David's great. David's just done some stuff for 2000 AD, isn't he? He's done The Visible Man. Really nice stuff, yeah.
Oh, nice. The Prides and the Stiffs are going to be there. I think there's a balloon animal maker, isn't there, Sean? Wasn't there?
I think there was. And generally, you have the hired cosplayers as well. There's the Jack Sparrow. I think he's from Wales actually, but he's fantastic and he's generally there as well. Each there's a couple of others. You normally a Dread, isn't there?
Yeah. So there's also going to be people like Dead Star Publishing, Hellbound Media, the Psychedelic Journal of Time Travel. Have you ever picked up any of them, Tony?
I have. Yeah, I did a review of one of them that I don't think they liked very much.
So next weekend's going to be interesting.
We'll be avoiding that
time. Keep your head down.
No, it wasn't bad. It was just a bit run of the mill.
Yeah, well, they'll have a new issue out there, so should check them out. So there's going to be lots of people there. It's going to be a great family day out. Lots of other things going on, as well as myself and Sean going to be there.
So, which what makes the day really?
Yeah. So when you see us, you can get your refunds. No,
it means I can leave stuff behind it.
Oh. We've actually got two tables. Yeah, normally we share, but this time we've got so much stuff now that we've had to have two tables.
Yeah. It's not quite an empire.
We're trying to compete with Big Punch. We're actually opposite them as well. So
we'll be able to throw things at them.
Do them.
Talking of Comic Cons, we have a competition.
Yay, the segue.
Nottingham Comic Con, Saturday the 24th of October. The website is www.nottingham.com. comiccon.co.uk. They are very kindly, and they're great people, and it's a great convention. I've been to all of them so far. Real good laugh. Two tickets they've donated to give away as a competition on the show. We did the first week of it last week, and this is the question. On episode 4, we had guest artist Christian Wildgoose on. He told us that he'd recently gone digital and had switched from pen and paper, which all us old blokes use, to using something called a Wacom. I don't think Wacom sounds a bit weird, but it's a Wacom tablet.
I know where your mind is going. Let's just carry on.
Vince said he was whacking it like earlier, but I don't know what that means. And the question is, where did he get his tablet from? He got it from a specific and quite an interesting place. Where was that? And that's the question. If you know that, and you should do, if you've listened to that episode, because it's quite interesting, write into awesomecomicspod at gmail.com or on Twitter, we're at the Awesome Pod, or write into our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Podcast, and give us the answer. And if you do, you're going to the bin to, well, not the dustbin, but you'll go in and we'll give it to one of our mates and you won't stand a look in. No, that's a lie. you might win two tickets, which it's a great convention to go to. Some huge names, and we're going to be there as well, mucking about and doing a couple of panels and all that sort of rubbish. So, should be good. Are you going to that, Sean?
I am indeed. That's the one on the 24th, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll be there. I'll be at Melksham. I'm doing Ice in Birmingham in September, and then also doing Thought Bubble in Leeds in November.
Cool, brilliant.
So, yeah. Pretty much got one a month.
Shall I run through the events?
Go for it.
Okay, so there's a few events coming up, which is the first one is the 26th this week, which we talked about before. Rachel Stott is signing Planet of the Apes and her Star Trek crossover trade paperback. That's at Orbital Comics. 8 Great Newport Street in London. Nearest tube is Leicester Square, and that's from 6 p.m. onwards. Melksham's after that. The 2nd of September, Mark Buckingham and Disraeli are signing the Miracle Man issues they've done, again at Orbital Comics. That's from 7 p.m. onwards. The 5th of September is the International Comics Expo, also known as ICE. That's at the Studio Venue Company, which is Cannon Street, Birmingham, 52B25EP. Guests at that are going to be Charlie Adlard from Walking Dead, Hunt Emerson, who we talked about a few weeks ago, sort of a naughty cartoonist, Dave Gibbons, I haven't heard of him, Eric Stevenson, who's head honcho at Image, I think, John Wagner, the 2000 AD writer, and Ian Gibson, the 2000 AD and other artists. So they're going to be there. Apparently, I've not been to the ICE before, but apparently it should be quite interesting. And on the 6th of September is the Comic Mart again.
Before you say, Sean's going to be at ICE, and also I'll be at ICE.
Will you be at ICE?
Yeah, nice. I'm going to be at ICE as well.
Ice, baby.
Classic. Back to you, Tony.
Thank you. In between. And on the 6th of September is the Comic Mart, which I always go to and is well worth going to if you want to get a load of cheap comics and fill your loft up with dirty brown paper.
Where's the Comic Mart on?
It's 6th of the 9th. If you pay a fiver, you can get in at 11. If you want to get in for free, you can get in at 12. And it's the Royal National Hotel. That's Bedford Way in central London. The nearest tube is either Euston or Russell Square Tube.
How busy does that get?
Not as busy as it used to, dude, I think is the answer to that one. You can still get to all the boxes. You know, there's no huge waits to look through long boxes and all that sort of thing. It's still quite manageable from a sort of attendance point of view.
These Comic Marts, they interest me whenever you mention them. It sounds like the sort of thing that I'd be lost in there for hours, nay, days. Yeah. I mean, how old are the issues?
They go all the way back. You know, you can get a lot of cheap Bronze Age stuff there. I'm trying to sort of complete my first comics collection. You remember first comics you did American Flag and E-Man and, you know, Badger. Yeah. And so I'm sort of trying to complete that. And you can always find issues of that. But you'll see a load of Elementals, which we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's all that sort of thing, yeah. And you also got a lot of English, old English books, old English comics. There's a lot of old English weekly comics artwork up there. You know, like stuff from Commando and Star Blazer.
Really?
Valiant and Hotspur books. Yeah, there's quite a lot of that there as well. A lot of old annuals.
How much does that sort of stuff go for? Because there's some beautiful artwork in those older sort of issues.
There is. I mean, it's anything really. There's all sorts of prices, you know, 40, 50, 60 quid upwards. Yeah. There's a lot of nice stuff there. There's a lot of overpriced stuff. But if you want to come away with a bag full of comics for a tenner, then you can easily do that as well.
Brilliant.
You
know?
Oh, awesome. I'll have to pop down to one of those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's well worth it. Yeah, and there's a little bit of a get together in the pub next door. There's a Facebook group for the Comic Mart, and you can sit next door and, you know, and talk comics. And they are actually quite nice guys. In the days where people were a little bit dysfunctional and smelt a BO, I think they've long gone now. They're actually generally people there. Okay,
we're still keeping it alive.
Yeah, keeping it real.
keeping it real. Splendid. So is that all the events?
That's it, mate, yeah.
Recommendations? Shall we talk about that?
Any shout-outs or...
Dan?
I've got a quick mention. I'll put this link up, give this link to be put up. A chap called Daniel Sharp, I think I've got his name right. He's the writer on the Demon Archive webcomic, which is absolutely amazing sci-fi dystopian post-apocalyptic webcomic. He's done he's done a comprehensive article on how to promote your webcomic for free. Really worth checking out. He goes through every single kind of facet of it, of how to get the most out of promoting your webcomic for free, essentially. And he's working on the part two, which is how to promote your webcomic for paying and what's the best option to advertise and et cetera, et cetera. It's a really, really worth reading.
So what was that charity thing you did this week, Dan?
It's for a children's charity headed by the character called Thunderman, who is made up by Xander. He's a 4 or 5-year-old, and they essentially use him to promote children's charities. And I'm currently working on an image to be printed on a T-shirt for an anti-bullying campaign that's going to be...
really nice, mate, I have to say. Really nice.
Yeah, good job.
Oh, cheers. You know, try and give a bit back and stuff.
It's a cause that's well worth supporting as well.
Yeah, so hopefully when illustration's done and the T-shirts are available, we'll give you a link and you can buy them. Yeah.
I think, nice. What's the Thunderman Twitter? I'm trying to remember it now.
I think it's just @Thunder_man.
Yeah, because I know they tweet a lot of like the artwork that they get, everything that they get, they're retweeting it in the T-shirts and where and it's just a brilliant cause, so definitely check them out.
Give them you've been posting a load of warm-up sketches this week, haven't you?
Warm-up? Really?
Oh, no.
I thought that was just toilet paper.
Oh, dear God. Right, I'm editing that bit. Right. I've got a new couple of brush pens. Now, normally I don't use brush pens. I use a sort of a uniball, it's got like a more of a solid tip. Because I've always thought that I'm more heavy-handed when it comes to my artwork. But brush pens give a real nice sort of fluid line, so I wanted to try and get used to them more. And as I was doing it, I found they're quite nice for like sort of sketch pieces, like sort of head and shoulder kind of pieces. So, and I drew probably the only picture of Steve Rogers that I've ever been in any way happy with, because I love Captain America. I absolutely love Captain America.
Okay.
But whenever I draw him, I can't draw him for shit.
Right. Fair enough.
So so I just did a head and shoulders. Yeah, I've been posting those up on Twitter. Today I couldn't think of what to draw, and someone said Nightcrawler, so I tried a little Nightcrawler.
Oh, it's all the floppy head Nightcrawler. Yeah, nice. Yeah, really nice.
Thank you. So I'll be doing more of them. So yeah, check them out on my Twitter and stuff. Cool.
And thank you to Mark Lamming, who gave me a really nice shadow print today that he'd drawn. And Lara Margarita, if you know her, she's on Twitter, colorist. She'd coloured it. Really nice. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, lovely. Your comic room, Tony, that must be a treasure trove of delights.
It is, yeah. Yeah. It's I don't live in a big house, it's just the West Wing it's in, but it's it's on the top floor. When you come over I'll show you it. Yeah, it's a bit cluttered because I'm having a tidy. But I sent you a picture of it the other day. Did I send you a picture?
You did.
Yeah, awesome. I sent you a picture on the Twitter a few minutes ago actually.
I saw that.
and Dan didn't mention it. That's all you need to say.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that.
So, what have you been reading, Tony?
Oh, so should we do recommendations?
Yeah, let's recommendations, lads. What has everyone been reading? Tony?
Strange Nation, which I got sent through by Paul Allor, that I think I sent on to you guys, didn't I?
Yes. Look brilliant, actually. I haven't had a chance to read it, but look brilliant.
Oh, so good. Written by Paul Allor, art by Juan Romero. It's Paul's at Paul Allor and his clockworkcomic.com. And it's basically a print edition. IDW are going to print, I think, from the digital book that was put out by Monkey Brain, which is Mark Waid's sort of enterprise, digital enterprise. And it's a story about a newspaper reporter called Norma Park, who's sacked from her job after reporting a UFO story. The editor in J. Jonah Jameson style said, oh, you're sacked, this is rubbish, it's all made up, we don't, nobody believes this sort of thing. And she manages to sort of start working for a magazine called Strange Nation, and her assistant is in fact Elvis, or that's not sort of at any point sort of solidly said, but he clearly is meant to be an elderly Elvis, and he sort of kung fu kicks his way through the issues, sort of fighting off various aliens and, you know, Sasquatches and stuff like that throughout it. And it's absolutely spot on. Best thing I've read for ages. I got to a point the other day, and I had to text. I think I put it out in our little Twitter group, didn't I? Just Sasquatch invasion.
Yeah,
just those two words. And I can't really say anything more than that because it's such a twist in the tail kind of story. But I got up to the point, and there was a Sasquatch invasion. I thought, this is brilliant. This is exactly, you know, this is spot on. Really, really, really good stuff. And it's I think 7 issues into a trade that IDW are putting out this week, I think. And it's well worth picking up. Beautiful art by Romero, and lovely colours. Yeah, it's like a, I suppose a bit like the Night Stalker or the X-Files or something like that, but with a bit, little bit more of a wink, and a little bit, you know, the X-Files is always that sort of hidden shadowy character that you never quite saw everything of. In this, they're just full on in your face, you know, full on alien invasion, full on Sasquatches, you know, this sort of thing. It's just always there. So it's well worth it. I can't say anything more and spoil it. Just read it.
Nice. It sounds right up my street.
Really good. You'll love it, mate. Yeah, I think so. You're right.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant. Where can you find that again?
That's at Monkey Brain site. You can go and get it there. I think it's going to be available in comic shops in a trade that IDW are doing. Or you can go to Paul's site, which is clockworkcomic.com.
I think Thrill Bent are the Mark Waid ones, not Monkey Brain.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. Yeah.
Before we get any listeners going, I think you'll find.
Yeah, you're right. No, sorry. Yeah, Mark Waid is Thrill Bent, isn't he? He's Monkey Brain is the other one. But yeah, I think Monkey Brain have got a deal with IDW where they get the IDW get first choice on their digital books. But yeah,
nice.
Really good.
Nice. What about you, Dan? Cool.
We had a webcomic sent into us, or a PDF of a webcomic called Zookanaut. Did you guys take a look at that?
Yes, I did. It looked very good.
It's good. It's by Otti Judson and Sonia Summers. I think Otti colours it and co-writes it, and Sonia draws it and co-writes it. It's cracking. I mean, one of the first things, I'll go to check out the website, and I would make an issue of this in future. Their website's really nice for a webcomic. It's nice, clean, well-designed, well-laid-out. It really puts me off. I go to a webcomic site and there's just clusters of ads, buttons everywhere. Yeah. It's just really like, oh God, it's putting a barrier straight away.
Yeah.
But Zookanaut, it's about a kind of an alien chap called Zooka, who's a big, stocky, beer-barreled green guy. And he's an alien who kind of fights his own nature and his own kind and tries to sort of redeem himself from his kind of like wasted life and wasted existence he had. The PDF that was sent in was part of the whole comic, story section called Caught in the Storm. And essentially, Zooka's consciousness gets swapped with kind of like this ruler in an underwater kingdom, and it all kind of goes awry from there. It's a really, really nice book. It's got a really rich vein of humour running throughout. The art's nice. Dialogue's great. I'd really recommend you check it out, and you can go and look at that at zookanaut.com.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, it did look really good. Really good fun. That's what it really looked to me. Yeah, great one to get into. As for what I recommend this week, I recommend a little book called The Mermaid and the Shark by Jessica Hickman. No relation of Jonathan Hickman. And she's a little illustrator that she does beautiful sort of pencil work and very clean sort of artwork on that I noticed on Twitter. And she put out this little little print book. It's only a small book, about 18 interior pages, which includes some concept sketch. And it's just a simple little story, really. It's a silent issue, and it's all based underwater. And it's the story of a mermaid who's swimming through the sea, and she encounters like a great white shark caught up in a fisherman's net. And it's a lovely little tale. It's like beautifully told, and it leaves you on quite a poignant note as well. Because Jessica, I know she's a big shark fan. I absolutely love sharks as well. They're like one of my favourite things ever. I did Space Sharks in the Red Man from Mars, so
so it takes something fascinating, put thousands of spikes and make some poor bastard kill it.
My ones are horrible alien bad guys, but Jessica's put like real nice sort of beautiful artwork of this shark in this, and it's a nice little tale. And she's got like some sketchbook pages in the back. Also on her online, she's got a sketchbook that you can get called Gestures, which is available. I mean, it was one of those things that her artwork caught me so much, I went on the website and actually ordered a print copy. straight from her, even though she's from the States, you know, and it was a little book. She signed it and I've got it, and I regularly sort of look through it because it's just a beautifully put together little book. You can find all her work at jessicahickman.com. You can buy her books, The Mermaid and the Shark and Gestures, at hickman.bigcartel.com. If I was to describe her sort of style, it's got a great sort of Disney style. And she's done like a lot of commissions and sketches before, and like, you know, she posts a lot on Twitter. And she did an awesome sort of Spider-Gwen sketch cover recently. And it was the sort of thing where I immediately replied to her, I think you should draw this book. You know when you see those sort of artworks and you immediately think, yeah, you'd be great for this. Yeah, definitely check out her Twitter, at Jessica A. Hickman. She's just a lovely person, and like, well, the artwork's well worth checking out. So, The Mermaid and the Shark by Jessica Hickman. Definitely check it out, people. Sean, we're going to point the bat signal at you again. What do you recommend that our listeners check out?
Well, as I mentioned before, you had the October Faction, which is fantastic. So check that one out, especially if you're into kind of monsters and kind of screwed up kind of artwork. That's very good. There's a webcomic that I generally follow that visually I just think is amazing. And just reading it, the humour in it, I just find it great. It's called Romantically Apocalyptic. Have any of you heard that one?
Yes, I have.
I've not seen it.
And it's hilarious. Yeah,
it's by, I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, Vitaly S. Alexis. Is the guy that does it, and he basically travels the world quite a lot, it appears, and just takes stock images of just everything he sees, and just has like loads of reference materials of buildings and people, and he's created this kind of world that's half made up of real photographs but have been manipulated by hand to make them look like derelict wastelands and things. And it's kind of like a world where no one seems to exist apart from a man with a gas mask on and a hat called Z-Captain, and he just has a cup with a red heart on it. And then throughout his adventures, he kind of like speaks to corpses, and it's very much kind of like one-page humour, but then it kind of builds into a story the more you read it. And then there's a few other survivors, and all of the survivors basically have gas masks on, so and just different colour eyes and things to kind of tell them apart. And yeah, it's just a very, very funny webcomic. And I think when it was at Leeds,
they were at Thought Bubble last year.
One of his dominions were there. And I actually bought the book of it, of the first kind of few chapters, and yeah, it's just very fun. I think you can go to romanticallyapocalyptic.com, or I think it's got an abbreviated one, but I can't remember what that is. So yeah,
it's interesting because like using photo ref sort of artwork and photo manipulated, that can look horribly cheap and sort of nasty and not really working in a sort of storytelling aspect. But this is a man who's got mad skills doing this.
Yeah, it is amazing to look at. And yeah, it is very funny. A few of them are kind of jokes that don't quite hit the mark, but in the majority of them, you know, they kind of, even if they don't, they pay off in a few more kind of pages.
And if I remember, the website looks quite nice. I mean, back to what Dan's point was, the website's it's very professionally done, isn't it? I think
it seems to be a bit more bloated these days, and each kind of page now seems to have kind of a blog entry underneath it with almost like a sub story about what's going on. But the actual story is great. And the other one I wanted to mention was one I actually picked up. I can't remember which event it was at, but it looked absolutely gorgeous. It's called Horizon. There seems to be a variety of books. This one's I've got is called Book One, The Falling, and it's by Andrew Wildman. And I'll just read you the synopsis on the back, which sold me. A story of love and loss, fear and freedom, a toy rabbit, and very big robots.
Yay! I'm in.
and it's kind of like a young 15-year-old girl that is not happy in her life and that, and goes and discovers like a dream world where anything can happen, and this dream world seems to have all the robots in. And within it, her toy rabbit kind of talks to her and can move by itself. But it's one of those books that just looks amazing. It's all pencil, but the cover's kind of pencil, but just has blue text. And just the kind of greys against the blue, it's just a very nicely put together book. And the story itself is a very thought-provoking one. It's not just kind of chucked out there. It's got a lot of kind of meaning behind it.
It's not all just visuals then. There's a bit of heart to it as well.
Yeah. It seems to be from kind of past experience. And it kind of starts off with a dedication to his dad in it, and there's like an introduction to kind of how he decided to write this book. And then at the end, again, it's it's just got like a reference of how he came up with the character and just acknowledgements of people that, not because it's a Kickstarter or anything, but because there's people that he'd like to thank that either inspired him or helped him or just supported him. So it's just kind of a book that just feels like a lot of love went into it. And as such, you just have pleasure reading it.
Cool. Nice.
So, yeah, can I do one more? Do you mind if I do one more, guys?
Why not? Everyone's doing whatever they want on this show.
Thank you.
It's a book called His Name is Gabriel, and it's by Planet Jimbot. And I wrote a piece on it, and I really enjoyed it, and I thought it just was worth mentioning. Written by Jim Alexander, art by David Hill. And it's imagine V for Vendetta, but if you imagine that the government are the Catholic Church, and there is some truth to the sort of... of the Catholic religion, and there is a Jesus wandering around. He's wandering around Glasgow, believe it or not, in a Stone Roses t-shirt, and there is a guy who's obviously some former sort of saint who's being chased by the government and the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church have got like a dread-like police force, and one of them's a werewolf and all this sort of thing, and it's really, really interesting stuff. And it's by Planet Jimbot, who... I've been a bit hit and miss for me recently, but Jim Alexander sent me this the other day, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I sent him an email back saying, this is spot on. This is exactly where an ex, you know, half Scottish, ex boarding school, ex Catholic atheist, this is the sort of comic I want to read. You know what I mean? And my mother's from Glasgow, and I fully appreciate, the sort of dour, pragmatic sort of attitude of Glaswegians, you know, to this sort of story. But the art's really nice. The art is even, is definitely on the ladder of David Lloyd. You know, he's got that sort of shadowy sort of black and white style. Really, really nice. And yes, you can get that from Planet Jimbot. If you go to their Facebook page. They have got an Etsy store as well, but if you go to their Facebook page and you'll find it all.
They go to quite a few cons as well, I think, don't they?
They do, yeah. Yeah, they're really good. In fact, they're etsy.com/UK/shop/Planet Jimbot. It's a bit complicated, but there you go. That's what it is. It'll be in the show links, I'm sure.
Yes, it will indeed. That's Tony's subtle way of telling me put it in the show link. So. thank you very much for joining us, Sean.
Yeah, definitely.
It's been a pleasure.
You survived this show.
Yeah. Well, it's quite nice actually being answered. It's like I said to you before, where I actually listen to the podcast at work, there's certain times where I just kind of answer, and it's like, why aren't you replying to what I'm saying? Especially when Tony references old crap films, because generally I'm actually on his side. I'm like, yeah, I remember Lex, that's pretty good.
Oh, don't get him up. You haven't seen anything awful this week, have you, Tony?
Well, I've started watching Scanner Cop 2.
Shut up, Tony.
I watched the Fantastic Four film.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. You two really are kindred spirits. Yeah.
Got the Doll Man in a minute.
Oh God.
Oh, classic Doll Man. What's the one where he fights the little toys? I'll find out for next week. I should watch it and review it next week.
Oh, there's so much for people to look forward to. Just lastly, Sean, where can people get Descending Outlands?
They can pick up Descending Outlands by going to either my personal website, evilcat.com. Or from descendingoutlands.com, or they can pick it up from hopefully soon Comixology if I ever hear back from them, or they can come to see me at Melksham next weekend, where you can buy a copy face to face and meet my glorious bastard face.
Right, hopefully you enjoyed this episode, folks, and got plenty of input, and
this is the episode that doesn't get aired.
yeah, if you're listening to this, this is the bonus material, the unseen episode that was bad.
Yeah, I knew it was going bad when you actually hired me. It was, you were having a good run, and after about seven episodes, you're like, oh shit, we're out of guests.
Yeah. We need to cancel the show for insurance purposes. Who can we get on? Yeah,
we've got women on next week. That's going to go wrong.
Yeah. This show is the like the original Fantastic Four film where we're just being made so you can keep the rights.
In the title, I'll just put episode 8. The low point. Anyway, hopefully you enjoyed.
That's up for me.
Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, folks. As always, let us know what you think about it, what we've talked about. If there's anything else that you think we should mention, if we got anything wrong, which I don't think we did, I think we caught everything this week. And there's several ways you can do that. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can send issues for review or just any links that you think we should check out to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow us @theawesomepod. on Facebook. We're on facebook.com, Awesome Comics Podcast. And of course, you've probably been listening to this on awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you haven't, check out the website. There's loads of links for all the books that we've talked about. And you can also find us on iTunes. We had our first review, which was a 5-star. Hey. Yes. And we don't want
me.
Yeah, that Tony bloke is a ledge. Yeah. 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 So if you've listened to us on iTunes, drop us a review. Let us know what you think. Or
definitely.
Yeah. Hopefully not too many insults.
A good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sean, where can people find you on Twitter?
Normally stalking people.
No, that's not a general question.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter @dobes2. That's DOBES2.
Splendid. Dan, where can they find you?
It's @VanguardComic.
Tony?
It's on Twitter @EzoYes, which is EzoHYEZ, or you can find me in the review section at downthetubes.net.
Well worth checking out, because he doesn't just review books, he also reviews conventions like the Safari Festival and stuff like that. Well worth checking out. And you can, that's all right, mate. You know, don't want I am your personal fluffer. And you can find me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. one day.
Sorry, the fluffer comment is just still in there.
Yeah. Thank you again for joining us, Sean. Thank you out there for listening to us for like an hour, like 90 minutes. And from myself, Dan, Tony, and Sean, thanks for listening. Have a great week and stay awesome.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.